back in the studio, which is a grandiose term for
the room we sit in
to do these recordings. But last week we were, well, last week people got us twice, so already that's a win.
Yeah.
But the second installment was down at MIPIM UK.
It was, which was, well, you listen to it to find out how it was, but it was...
that sounded very direct. Listen to it.
Listen to it. But it was very techie, wasn't it, down there?
It was really techie.
Which is exciting. We went in a VR pod. And you can hear the interview with BMPPRE about that. But what we didn't view was all the recording we did when Emily and I were in there.
I think it's safe to say you handled that infinitely better than I did. I found it entirely disorientating. Yeah. I mean, I know it's the future and everything, but the future, in my opinion, it's great, but I mean, you press a little button and suddenly you're on top of a building. It seems really...
it's a bit Star Trek, isn't it? Like, beam me up, Scotty.
Yeah.
But you don't know where you're going to end up. Or you didn't, anyway.
No idea. So. I mean, roof, and then I ended up on the street, then the middle of the road.
Yeah.
I think, it took me quite a long time to work out I was even in Paris. The big sign saying La Seine should have maybe given me a clue.
And the Eiffel Tower in the background.
I didn't spot that. I was too busy trying not to fall off the top of a very tall building.
Yeah. Well, luckily, nobody died. So we're still here today. And actually, we've just come back from a very interesting interview, haven't we?
We have.
So we went over to CBRE's office in the West End to talk to Chandra Dandapani. I said that wrong. I got it right originally and now I've got it wrong. Apologies, Chandra. Who is CBRE's chief technology officer. CBRE Global, that is. So she runs all things tech for the whole of CBRE, which is pretty massive.
It's a big, big job. And she, I mean, it's not, she's come from the banking sector where she'd done, you know, digital transformation, and she was a Capital One before. But still, I mean, it's huge, isn't it?
It's a big job, isn't it? And she was a very smart, or is, not was, is a very smart
she
lady.
She is so smart.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate for her being put in front of us.
Well, I think we knew just enough to be able to keep up and not so much that we weren't completely in awe, which is maybe the perfect dynamic
and
for a
podcast. And of course, we're only faking when we don't know. Of course, we know it.
Yeah, obviously. I thought you were about to say we're only faking when we do know it. So it's like, don't say that.
Yeah,
that is actually
the truth. but we should stop. Gabbing on here and let everyone listen to Chandra. Here she is.
We are here in CBRE's London HQ, Henrietta House, with Chandra Dandapani, who is Chief Technology Officer of CBRE. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So you've just arrived in London.
Yes, as of yesterday morning.
Okay, so we haven't got you too jet lagged, I hope.
No, nope, I'm good.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining us, firstly, on the Tech Talk Radio podcast. It's an absolute pleasure for us to have you, so thanks for that. You joined CBRE just over a year ago now. I wonder if you could give our listeners just a little bit of an overview of you, your career to date, what started you on this path to a CTO at CBRE?
Sure. I've been at CBRE for 15 months, and prior to that, I was at a bank in the US. It's a top 10 bank called Capital One. I know they're based here in London as well. And I was there for 17 years, did a number of different things, marketing analysis, ran a online consumer business marketing analysis, early days of internet. And ran operations, and most recently did digital transformation, and I was the CIO for one of their four divisions.
Okay.
And so the role here at CBRE seemed like a natural progression to do what I was doing at Capital One, but at a global company.
How did the jump to digital transformation happen in your previous role? That's interesting.
You know, I've always been interested in technology, and I've done a number of different things specific to helping Capital One build a lot of the systems related to consumer lending in-house. And my background prior to Capital One, I have a couple of MBAs, and I've always liked the business aspect. And so, like I said, Capital One gave me the opportunity to rotate into different roles, including marketing analytics, where I was responsible for product strategy, credit risk management for a large line of business, and ran operations. So I knew a lot of aspects about the entire consumer lending business. And so when you think about digital transformation, it's about really obsessing about what our customer needs are and applying technology and data to bring those to bear in a successful way. So when digital transformation became a thing, probably about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, it seemed like I was a natural fit for the division that I was part of. And so I started working on, it became a formal role, I think, sometime in the 2013 or 2014 timeframe. And as part of that, I started a concept of what we call, ultimately called it the Garage, which was an innovation hub where we were able to bring together a really cross-functional group team, very smart product managers, designers, and software engineers. And we started finding the magic in these teams working together, mm-hmm. which generated a lot of value. And that's how it came about.
And I guess that the same sort of customer focus, sort of that translates to real estate quite easily, I suppose.
Absolutely. Yes. So, for instance, CBRE as a company has always, I think from everything I can see, been very focused on client outcomes and client experiences. And we work with investors and occupiers as our clients. And therefore, this concept of bringing digital experiences and transformation to our clients seemed like a natural extension.
Hmm. If you just have even a fleeting glance at the CBRE website, it's quite clear how invested in tech solutions the business is. And there's a smorgasbord of solutions that you have, not just for occupiers, but for investors as well. Are you able to talk us through some of those products and where you, I suppose, see the most benefit?
Sure. So if you think about any business like CBRE, right? Early last year, I think it's last year or early this year, you've heard of Vantage, mm-hmm. Which is our suite of enablement technologies. CBRE has been investing in technology for some time now. And what I wanted to do through the Vantage campaign is to bring to light what CBRE already has in-house and partners with in terms of our external suppliers from a technology perspective, and map it to different phases of the client lifecycle. Because it's one thing for us to say we have all these technology products, but how does it really impact clients at the different stages of their lifecycle? So we put together, we have several hundreds of applications at CBRE. What I wanted to do is identify what we call our anchor applications, which ones are the most relevant and which ones add the most value to our clients and or our professionals. And that's what the Vantage suite, that's how it came about. And in terms of which applications, where we would add value, I would say more than talking about it in the context of which applications, I would look at it as there are core platforms that cut across business lines, right? Those would be traditional ERP platforms, which are more internal. And then we think about it in terms of what are the elements of data we can bring together for clients. So if you're a client working with CBRE, how do we provide you easy access to your portfolio, and how do we make sure that you can gain insights into how your portfolio is doing for you, right? So there's a huge focus on data. And then we also want to figure out how to continue to improve the experience clients have in interacting with our professionals in a more digitally enabled way, so that it saves time for them and it gives them the omni-channel experience of interacting with CBRE.
We were having a conversation just yesterday, weren't we, about data and the role that is increasingly playing in real estate, and also what it is that the problem, I suppose, that data is trying to solve. We came up with the fact that people want to just have more time to do stuff and want life to be be easier. Mm-hmm. And which sort of echoes just with what you said, be that for the customer or excuse me, or for the employee. How transformative do you think the collection of and proper use of data is going to be for this industry?
You know, I'm biased towards data, I'll tell you that, because I find that it's easier to draw conclusions about any situation, whether in terms of opportunity or risk, by looking at data and by reading from the data, right? So I think there's a tremendous value that data can add to this industry, simply because historically the industry has been relatively opaque when it comes to data. And I think that's starting to change. And like you mentioned, you know, for all of us, the most precious commodity is time. And having the right data at the right time, it gives you better context, it helps you personalize your experiences. And I frankly think it also helps companies like CBRE differentiate, because we have a lot of data, we have more data than a lot of other companies, competitors in this industry, and therefore we are looking at how do we leverage that to drive better client outcomes.
Sorry, and do you think that the industry is collecting the right kind of data? I read another thought leadership piece from CBRE about using Google Trends to help with commercial real estate investment. We've just seen that Google's been appointed to master plan a whole new town in Toronto from the internet up. Do you think that the type of data that we'll collect and use in this industry is going to change from the usual rents, lease lengths, investment volumes?
I would say yes, because as you know, buildings, there's a lot of conversation about IoT and smart buildings, and there's so much data that is possible, and it's actually being collected in the industry in pockets, right? What we don't see yet is a standard set of definitions or a standard ways of interpreting data that, let's say, across buildings or across portfolios of clients. And that's a rich target area for us to continue to look at. And there's so much, if you think about real estate, like any other industry, there's a set of internal data sets that are internal to the industry, internal to the company, and then there are external data sources, as well as external indicators of what's going to happen, right? We were talking earlier about Houston. So what happens with Hurricane Harvey, and you know, there's so much other data that's available to help companies predict what's going to happen, right, in terms of commercial real estate. So I think it's a very rich area to mine. The key is to not just get lost in the sea of data and to chase data for data's sake, but really work back from a business strategy and what really makes a difference.
Sure. When you talk about getting lost in data, that's interesting, and from what we've seen from speaking to people or listening to people talking about data previously, is that it can be quite easy to get lost in it. So when people are consuming data, what is it that you think that they are after? Is it the hard data, or are they, as Sam was just saying with the Google Trends, is it more that data which has been sort of applied to form more of a trends analysis type piece of information?
I would say there are variations in terms of data usage sophistication. There are some people who are very comfortable if you give them a visual dashboard that tells them here is how their portfolio is performing, right? And that's more than what they need. There are others who want to get to, at the other end of the spectrum, the raw data, right? And they want to do their own analytics and crunching and drive insights from it. And there are companies that are deploying data scientists to do that. And then you have companies like Google and Microsoft that are out to try and democratize the use of machine learning and data, right? So you have multiple components along the spectrum, and I think it's not one answer that fits everybody.
Is there some work to be done around skills for people just wanting to sort of know what data is available out there and what is helpful? For example, I guess there might not be that many people in real estate who think to look at meteorological data, mm-hmm. and use that to think, well, where should we build, or what type of building should we build? And then the sort of raw skills of being able to understand a spreadsheet or whatever new technology comes mm-hmm. through that pumps data out in front of you, and just going, well, I've got this data set, but I don't know what to do
right.
with it.
Right. And in many ways, it's not unique to this industry, right? A lot of industries go through this evolution, and there is always going to be a limited supply of, you know, if I could use the term, hardcore data scientists, right? Mm-hmm. Who are able to work with data.
Sounds like a good job, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes. And I think that skill set will be in shortage, but there are a lot of companies that are therefore looking to figure out how to democratize that, right? And how to, you know, create machine learning. You know, you can ask Alexa for a lot of things. And so I think for a company like ours, it's looking at the whole spectrum and saying, you know, do you have standard metadata definitions? And are you able to connect data across different systems so that we can make sense of it? And we will have a small specialized group that focuses on the more advanced data analytics and capabilities. And then all the way to the other end of the spectrum, where we will create automated dashboards that tell people what's going on any particular day.
Do you think that small specialized group will expand as the sort of role of the traditional surveyor or broker changes, that they'll become more of the hardcore data scientists? Or we had a session last week, didn't we, at MIPIM UK, looking at the transformation of the agent, and there was a lot of chat around, or it's about client, what was the word?
Liaison.
Client liaison. Mm. And that
client what?
Liaison.
Liaison, okay.
And so I think there was an American example, wasn't there, about the brokers who first did the deal for LinkedIn to find them an HQ, now are very much about looking at their whole portfolio and maybe not doing the hard cold broking deal, but giving that trends advice to them.
Yeah, so I do believe there will always be a smaller group of very specialized things in any occupation, right? However, the so whats of what that specialized group can build will become more democratized. And therefore, for our professionals, you know, how do you, even if you think back, right, before the days of the iPhone, and things that used to be hard to do are now much easier to do. So if you think about where technology can continue to make our lives easier, I feel easier access to data and insights, things that may be very hard today, where you have to look at multiple spreadsheets or sources to come up with something. I think those things can get more automated and easier mm-hmm. for our users. And then there'll be growing sophistication on, so what else is possible with that? And the degree to which different companies can pursue that and deploy the so what of the data will have varying degrees of success.
Mm-hmm. And we talked a little bit about CBRE's investment in tech. Obviously, over the last year, we've seen Fraud was right at the beginning of the year. We've seen you guys be one of the major investors in Fifth Wall.
Mm-hmm.
They've just made a couple of very decent investments. Mm-hmm. And there was also Mainstream,
mm-hmm.
that's correct. And then just last week, not a tech company, but buying a advisor in the
California.
Bay Area,
mm-hmm.
yeah, who advise a lot of the tech companies. So there's obviously a real focus
yes.
there. Can you maybe talk us through a few of those investments, what it is that attracts you to Fraud, to Mainstream, to Fifth Wall?
Sure. Our strategy really from a technology perspective is to do a combination of build, buy, or partner. And you know, we live in an ecosystem, an increasingly connected set of ecosystems. So what we're looking at is, for instance, with Float, they had technology that we felt was very easy for our users and for our clients to be able to visualize and build a series of test fits and put in the relevant parameters that they need in terms of number of occupants, amount of space, etc. And it would have taken us longer to build something like that, so buy made a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And on the other end, we had Mainstream as a product. We've been using that for close to, I think, at least 15 years.
Wow.
and there's a lot of domain expertise that has gone into it, and CBRE was the largest client for that product, and so we wanted to make sure that we can, you know, that was both a risk mitigation and opportunistic play where we wanted to acquire Mainstream. We like the product and it's been very successful for us. So you mentioned Fifth Wall. Mm-hmm. Because there is so much activity starting to happen in this prop tech scene, right? We wanted to make sure that we have a keen eye on what's going on outside our four walls, and Fifth Wall enables us to get in early in terms of identifying startups that may be looking to do some innovative things in this industry, and be able to partner with, or at least observe and learn from their successes or not. So that's why I love our partnership with Fifth Wall. And Brad and Brendan have been great at you know, both unearthing opportunities for us and frankly even being sounding boards for what we are looking at. So
you met with Brad and Brendan, didn't you?
I did. So I met with Brendan in, so I interviewed Brad and Brendan together maybe a month and a bit ago now, and then met Brandon in London with Ross Bailey, who appeared here just before, because they made their announcement of their first European investment. And then met Brad in New York Real Estate Tech Week last week. So it's been really interesting, and it's been great to put faces to names and voices as well. And very, you know, really exciting to see their decision on in terms of their first European investment. Because when I spoke to them originally, they were saying, you know, we are North America focused at the moment, but they won't remain that way, and we will be looking to make a move.
That's something. Yes, that's something I've been talking to them a lot about, because we are a global company and we like what Fifth Wall does for us in the US, and we want to figure out how to expand that. And I like the fact that Brad and Brendan are being very cautious, though. They're not just overreaching.
Yes.
And so, yeah, it's certainly something that we look forward to working with them on.
I'm interested in your opinion, actually, on taking that point a bit further about, you know, being a North American based, but looking beyond North America. For a very long time, I think North America has been seen as a sort of beacon of the tech world, and it still is in many ways. Obviously, you've got the Bay Area, you've got New York, you've got Boston, you've got, you know, Austin and Dallas, and all kinds of pockets as well.
Mm-hmm.
But something that came up at New York Real Estate Tech Week was that actually the relative immaturity of the European market, while still being very ambitious, is very attractive to North American investors, North American startups, looking for a foothold in Europe, and looking maybe particularly even at London. Would you agree with that, that there is a bit of a shift happening?
I would say yes, there is a shift happening, and it's happening along both the dimension that you just talked about, as well as our clients in Europe and in Asia. You know, they're not very different in many ways from what our clients are expecting in North America, right? So with CBRE being a global company, it's fascinating for me to see, okay, I would hear from teams that we need to do something in a particular space in the US market. And then the same week I would hear that, you know, a team in Australia is doing something similar, and then a team in France is working with clients. So the nice thing for us is, because we have all these offices around the world, we can actually both see trends that are emerging from a client perspective, and also what our teams are seeing in terms of things that we need to build, buy, or partner. So I certainly think Europe, you know, I was talking to someone earlier today, think about what's happening in Berlin. And, you know, obviously London is a big market in terms of startups and investments. You're seeing some things happening in Berlin that are actually quite interesting, and of course in France and other places. So it's good for us to have that bird's eye view of what's going on in Europe, and connect the dots between Europe and Americas and APAC.
And I suppose that's a tech enables that as well, does it? The communication between your
right.
offices. So are you investing internally in those sort of solutions as well?
So, you know, we, as a company, we have the office suite, and we use social tools internally, and it helps immediately. You know, I'm a big consumer of what people say within our social network internal to CBRE, so that I can see, okay, who's talking about what, right?
We all have to know what everyone's talking about.
Yes, yes.
The human nature. What really excites you in the world at the moment in terms of tech and then that can be sort of outside of real estate and where you might see that being applied in real estate?
You know, there's so many things that excite me about what's going on. I feel like we're all in a movie that's playing out, and nobody knows how the movie's going to shape, right? There's so much happening within technology, and technology is becoming so pervasive. And, you know, I often have to check my own thinking and say, okay, am I feeling this way because of my role, right, and what I do? But I actually don't believe it just because, you know, I happen to spend a lot of time in digital and tech. I think the world is changing very fast, and technology is becoming so pervasive. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, it's great for people, for all of us as consumers of the technology, because it helps us become more efficient. It gives us more time to do the things that we like to do. So I'm pretty fascinated about what's going on. You know, if you think about everything from how would quantum computing come into play, and then, you know, what's happening with machine learning and AI, and what's happening with blockchain. So there are lots of trends that are happening at the same time, and all of those have implications for sure for real estate, and of course for industries beyond that.
Having come from the banking sector, which obviously was a bit ahead of real estate, some people would argue that lots of industries have been ahead of real estate, but having come from that sector, you must have seen sort of a similar, well, of course, mm-hmm. you did, you know, working digital transformation, you'd have seen a similar pattern emerging. What mistakes do you think were made in that sector that we can learn from in real estate?
You know, I tell my colleagues at CBRE that when I was in banking, I used to think that banking was much slower in adopting technology. And then I discovered commercial real estate. So I think, you know, oftentimes people think about when it doesn't go well, right? People think about digital transformation as something that the technology team takes care of. And I feel that's something that companies have learned sometimes the hard way. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at what's happening in retail, and just over the past 6 months, many retail CEOs coming, you know, and saying in their interviews with the press that they didn't see the pace of change coming, right? That happened too quickly. And so I think some of the learnings from other industries are, there are certain things that are always going to be very critical to transformation, which is the intense focus on what our clients' needs are, number one. The second thing I believe is very important is, in the current technologically infused world we live in, you cannot think about technology as someone else's job. It's really about cross-functional collaboration and agility, mm-hmm. and making sure that we can move fast in identifying opportunities and being able to leverage those. And the third, which we've spent a lot of time talking about today, is just recognizing the power of data, mm-hmm. and how all those three things come together. Mm-hmm. And you can see that playing out in every industry. There are many industries like media and that have come before us, and banking is further ahead than commercial real estate. But the patterns are, like you said, repeating, and therefore, we should make sure that we don't have to relearn some of the mm-hmm. scars from the past.
There is a real education piece that needs to be done around that, isn't there? Because we talk quite often, and I'm trying to stop using the D word, the disruptive word around tech, because I think that hinders that education. Because, you know, it's really nice to hear you be really excited about all these transformations and what they can do for a company, rather than, you know, what they might take right. away. And I think, you know, sometimes with those retail CEOs, they said, "Oh, we didn't see it coming because it wasn't my job to look at that." It's born out of a mild fear that, oh well, if I don't look at it, it's not gonna get
go
me.
Away.
Yeah. So I think the noise that there is around tech, particularly in real estate at the moment, can only be a good thing, because it forces people to
right.
to listen, doesn't
right.
it?
Right. And, you know, as individuals, every one of us has adapted to having a smartphone in our hands, right?
Yeah.
And at home, many of our homes are, you know, nicely wired and smart. And so we just have to make sure that even if your job is not in technology, as a user of technology, you can reimagine what's possible, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't have to be able to write code. You simply have to reimagine what's possible in whatever function you're in, right? Whether you're in marketing, whether you're in, within a business line or operations, and then you can figure out how to bring it to life.
Yeah. I heard somebody say recently that we needed to keep an eye on the rise of the technocrat. So a situation where you've got either everybody trying to pile in to take responsibility or nobody trying to take responsibility for technology. Is that something that rings true with you or that you...
You know, I, like I mentioned, I'm a big believer in cross-functional collaboration, and innovation happens closer to where we interact with our clients. So whatever craft doesn't work in this economy, because you have to be able to be nimble in the local markets, which is where business happens, right? So I think I agree with you that we have to be careful not to have a one-size-fits-all or technology is the answer to everything.
Mm-hmm.
It really is working back from client needs and aligned with the business strategy of whatever business you're in.
But can you, with that in mind, are you able to talk us through sort of what priorities you have for CBRE as a business? Your feet firmly under the table now. What are you hoping to see the business look like in 2, 5, 10, 20 years?
I would say across our company and across business lines, I would like our processes and interactions with clients to be more digitally enabled. That's something that we're looking at across the board. And in some parts of the company, that's you know, that was already the case. In other parts, it's relatively new.
Mm-hmm.
But that's certainly something, because it just makes it easier for our clients and professionals to work together. I've already talked about data, you know, really figuring out where there is leverage with the data that we have access to and can have access to is a big priority for us. And the third is really looking at emerging trends, not just within this industry, but outside of this industry, and looking at where is the puck going, right? And how do we position? CBRE is already, you know, the largest commercial real estate services company, and how do we further solidify our lead and not just chase technology for technology's sake. So those, I would say.
Okay.
And underlying all that, because of the role I'm in, obviously information security is a big deal.
Especially today, I suppose. And here in, well, the European Union, maybe not for us that much longer, but mm-hmm. there's obviously some new rules coming out.
GDPR.
Yeah. Is that something that is high up on your mind of how to deal with it, if we're suddenly collecting all of this data?
Absolutely. And, you know, having spent several years in banking, I often find that regulation is our friend in getting a lot of things right. So, you know, that's the approach we used to take in my previous employer, and I find that it's actually very useful for us. So well in advance of the GDPR go live date, we are absolutely focused on not just what we need from a European perspective, but leveraging that to see how do we think about it across the company.
There was a quite a scary statistic that came out of a lawyer over here, Mitchell, I think it was, who said that the UK real estate firms that they'd talked to, only 20% said they would know if they'd had a data breach. Which is not a good stat, is it?
That's right.
I guess it'd be really interesting to know a little bit more about you as well. I was reading up that you like to write.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Emily and I should switch roles for one,
yeah.
One day, and we can pretend to know about all things data and technology. And
well, I would love that. Anytime.
What about writing, because it's very opposite to technology, I suppose, writing a pen and a paper. What is it about that experience that brings you joy?
You know, I I've learned about myself that I just like to put thoughts down on paper, and in some ways it's kind of cathartic. You know, there's a lot of things that go through my head, and when I write it, sometimes I go back and read it, like, okay, did I really write that? And my son says I shouldn't just pat myself on the back, but I think I like to write, and I do a good job writing for myself. At some point, I would like to figure out if I want to publish what I write. But
what do you write about?
I actually am writing three different things right now, and I have been, you know, and it depends on
your mood.
The mood, right, and state of mind.
And workload, I imagine.
Yes, of course, time of the day, right? I'm writing about digital transformation and how, really from a practitioner's viewpoint, right? And how do you make it real? So that's something, I just want to catalog what I'm going through, what I've gone through in my previous role and here, so that hopefully it's helpful for me as I look back and could be helpful for others.
Yeah, that sounds
great. And
we'll read it.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you. And the second, I love fiction. So I'm writing two different books on fiction, one with my now 11-year-old. We started it when he was younger.
Uh-huh.
So
he writes too?
I think he writes better than me.
Not on digital transformation, surely. Well, my
he
dear,
tries
maybe 11-year-old is the right person to ask.
I'm telling you, he tries to edit my digital transformation document, but yeah.
Excellent. And while you're over here in London, what's on the agenda here? Are you staying in London and then going back to the States, or are you going over to continental Europe as well? Are you going to look at Germany, look at Berlin?
This time I'm spending all my time in London, meeting a lot of people here at CBRE. And I would love to, last time I was here, I spent some time in Berlin, and I am planning to spend, you know, obviously I'll be coming back here, and I want to spend more time around Europe, really understanding what's going on in different countries. I spent some time in Spain. There's some great things happening there. And
whereabouts in Spain? In Madrid?
Madrid.
Yeah.
We have a really awesome business and a great leader there. And I think, you know, it's nice, easy to get around Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't spent enough time yet in all the different countries that I would like to, really understanding our business and what's unique to a country, what's different. But this time it's just London.
And anywhere further afield from Europe that you think is worthwhile for people looking at tech and the enabling, I guess the startups that might come through and enable this business?
Absolutely. You know, prior to my joining CBRE and spending time here in Europe, I would always spend time in Silicon Valley, obviously, and in Bangalore, India. And since joining CBRE, I've also had the opportunity to spend some time in Singapore. I think there is a lot of innovation happening in Asia Pacific that I'm very interested in. So in addition to Europe, that's another geography that I think we should watch.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck with the books.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
They're published. We'll be first in line.
I'd buy that book. In fact, I'd buy all three.
Yeah. So one of them, I think, is a sort of sci-fi book.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
How do you know?
Well, I did a little research, and I think one of them is sci-fi, which is very cool.
Well, a sci-fi book being written by someone who's very up on digital transformation, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I wonder how many other prop tech people are writing sci-fi books.
Yeah, or just books generally.
I have loads, I bet.
Yeah. And I love that her son is writing it for her and trying to edit her, particularly her data strategy book.
I imagine that's sort of a mixture of pride and I don't know what else when your 11-year-old child tries to write for you.
Yeah. But it would be interesting to know how many other people have sort of side passions outside.
Careful
of their
with that, though.
Yes.
Acceptable side passions to air on.
Side passions. You know, how many people are writers out there? How many people are photographers? And, you know, because I guess tech is quite a creative.
James Dearsley's a beekeeper.
Is he?
Yes, he is.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a side passion of his.
And of course, Anthony Slumbers used to be in art, didn't he?
Juliet Morgan used to make wine.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay, so next we need, how many did we just do? Four. We need four more for next week's issue.
Why? Because then that's eight.
Okay, five more.
Thanks.
Because Emily doesn't like eights.
I don't like the number eight.
Because she's weird. But no, let us know if you have, I don't want to say side passion again.
You untoward can say feelings,
side passions.
Untoward feelings was worse. I think side passions is okay now that we've established that we mean things like photography. Well,
yeah.
That was a bad example.
Yeah, I feel like we should probably stop.
I feel like we're digressing. I think we should get back to Chandra. And I thought that, obviously we talked about the book element, but in terms of what she's doing at CBRE and the sort of stuff that she was saying around data, and I to hear from her, and I shouldn't be collecting data for the sake of collecting data, and how it needs to be very sort of targeted and focused. It's really good to hear somebody who's in a role that big, that powerful at a company that big, that's on their agenda, on her agenda as well.
Absolutely. And just the, you know, she's quite clear in the priorities for the business, obviously one being around data, one being about a collaborative effort.
Yeah.
And also, you know, she's very clear that while CBRE might be headquartered in the US, that, you know, they are global and they are looking at tech innovations on a global scale. And she was particularly interested in Europe, wasn't she?
She was. And I think as well, we should do a little bit of a little bit of a shout out to anybody, not just in Berlin, but, you know, people around Europe, you know, doing what they're doing and doing similar things to things that we are seeing emerging in London. You know, we often have people from the States that we talk to over the phone that we include in these podcasts. And I think we should be doing the same for Europe. And, you know, particularly Berlin, Madrid, Lisbon, Tel Aviv, and anywhere else.
Yeah.
People have got stuff going on.
Let's go global.
Let's go global. Yes, I mean, arguably, with my job title, I should have been doing it for a while yet. But let's, you know, I think this podcast has been, you know, pretty good at being global in terms of that North America connection. But as we are discovering more and more, there's an awful lot happening in Europe that the North Americans are keeping an eye on as well. So let's do it.
Let's do it. And of course, although Chandra unfortunately can't be with us for the Tech Talk Academy, the final, on the 15th of November, her colleague Dave Eisenberg will be there, and we'll be speaking to him in the podcast next week. And we should hopefully be bringing you some updates on the Tech Talk Academy too. But if you do want to find out about how you get hold of tickets to come along to what is going to be an awesome event, obviously, because it's going to be hosted by Emily and I.
That might just see our ticket sales fall off a cliff. But anyway, here's hoping.
Yeah.
Bring the masses.
But just go to EGI and look for Tech Talk Academy, and you will be directed to where you can buy those tickets.
I mean, I'm jazzed about it. Are you jazzed about it?
I'm so jazzed about it.
Yes. I feel so excited that I got that word in there. And I don't think I've said "there you go" once.
We should end there then, on a high.
Let's do it.
Jazzed.